If you enjoyed podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Highway to Health Podcast, hosted by Jeremy Quinby, provides guidance, quality resources, and inspiration for anyone seeking wellness in mind, body, and spirit. There's an episode that you should check out called The Value of Our Emotions, where Jeremy helps listeners understand the role emotions serve and what we can learn about our present state by staying attuned to them. Check out Highway to Health Podcast on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to Hopeful Hints. I am major excited for today's guest. And for all month long, we are going to be learning about all things endometriosis and adenomyosis from experts like come here first and share, but most importantly, from patients that are just like you, that are just like me. I am one of you. If you're listening, you may or may not know, but I have endo, likely have adeno. You'll hear us like talk about endometriosis as endo, adenomyosis as adeno, just to shorten it up a little bit. But I think hearing from patients is one of the most powerful things. And for this patient and all patients to speak up is such a sign of bravery. And I just want to introduce Naomi Krantz. I am super excited to have you. A year ago, we would have had a whole different conversation than we are today. So I'm going to just turn it over to Naomi. You guys, you're going to want to hear this. Share this. Share today's episode with any woman in your life because, again, we are patients together in this and we are learning from each other. So take it away, Naomi.
Oh, my goodness. No pressure at all.
Right. And where to begin? Like, where to begin? I think the thing I want, you know, you to share and I want people to hear from you is go back to when you were like a young girl, too, and just share how this looked. And then I really want you to share how it changed, how it pivoted. You have children, you know, and how you first entered the medical arena with your symptoms and what that journey looked like, because it's sad, you guys. Like, grab some tissues, honestly. Like, Naomi's story is one that angers me, firstly, as her provider, but, like, it's sad. It's heartbreaking. And so what did it look like as a young teen?
Well, even before then, there's no such thing as PMI on this podcast. So I got my first period when I was 10. And right from the get-go, it was heavy and it was painful. And it was never really addressed, like my level of pain. It was, you know, periods are supposed to hurt. This is just part of it. My parents were like a little surprised that I started so young, considering it wasn't like in my family history to start so young. But it kind of just went with the wind. We didn't think very much about it, but right away, just very painful, very heavy. 10 years old and you're bleeding through stuff. Like, no 10-year-old should have to deal with that. It kind of progressed throughout my growing up years, junior high and high school. I was homeschooled all the way through, but had I been public schooled, I would have been missing classes every month, twice a month, once during my period and once when ovulation would have been taking place, because the pain was just so much and the bleeding was so intense during my period. But it was, again, never addressed. It was take some painkiller, lay with your heating pack. You know, I had a doll that I was given as a child, and I would lay with the doll under my belly and lay on my stomach just so that pressure was pressing into my abdomen and into my uterus to try and relieve some of the pain that I was experiencing at such a young age. Something that we never really connected all the dots with until, you know, just 2023. But I had so many digestive issues my whole life. I was kind of passed from doctor to doctor, and they'd say the same thing. You know, you're a bit of a mystery. You don't know quite what to do with you, and pass you off to the next specialist or the next doctor. Try going off this food. Try taking this supplement. We did a lot of natural medicine in my family, and there was, you know, your adrenal glands are off, let's turn them back on, let's make sure your thyroid is healthy. But no one ever connected menstrual health to my digestive issues, which turned out to be a huge thing. I began to believe at a really young age that it was simply my lot in life to have these issues, that somehow this was normal for me, which I don't think is fair for a 12-year-old to think, oh yeah, I just hurt whenever I eat things. you know? Things continued to get worse as I got older, especially after I got married and became sexually active. You know, the hormones shift when that happens, and the pain really ramped up. My period pain was really intense. I had a standing job where I stood at a station all day, and it would be so bad that I would like beg my manager, can I please sit down for 10 minutes? Because I'm like ready to cry and feel like I should be doubled over. I'm in so much pain. And I had very grateful management that allowed me to do that. But had I not been in that, I could have like lost my job for not showing up to work because I was in so much pain. I always thought that this was simply my lot in life. I thought maybe I had PCOS. You know, I had a relative who was diagnosed with PCOS, a close relative. And that's what all the doctors always said, the natural doctors, the naturopaths, they'd say, it's probably PCOS because we have that in your family. There's nothing, you know, change your eating habits, change your lifestyle. There's nothing really to do about it. We'll just see how it impacts your fertility. Everyone was more concerned with, you know, your fertility side of things than what I'm living in currently. And so I just thought that this was my normal, that I would, in a weird way, you think you're supposed to be in that kind of pain. It becomes something you can anticipate and you can depend on in a weird way because this is just the normal cycle of your life. I had other things like I had chronic fatigue. We thought I had mono for a while because I was just so tired and so fatigued all the time. I wrestled with insomnia. I had this weird leg pain. We always thought, you know, it's growing pain. Growing up, you get growing pains. But I don't think an 18-year-old should be having growing pain. And it would spread through my whole leg. It wasn't just like your knee where you normally would get growing pain. And we thought it was just nerve issues. Maybe I had done something. Maybe I'd messed up my leg somehow. But it was never looked into. It was always just, oh, that's one of Naomi's weird things. After I got married, we wanted to start having a family. I went in to get checked out for PCOS, and the OBGYN wouldn't do the blood work. She said I was not at the right time on my cycle for ultrasound and that there was nothing she was going to do to look into it. She was very dismissive, basically said I needed to just suck it up, that my periods couldn't be that bad. I probably wasn't in that much pain, just take some ibuprofen, continue to use the heat pack, and just without saying, this is probably in your head or you're being dramatic, that's what she was saying. And I remember leaving that appointment just gutted. Like I thought, oh, I'm going to get some answers. I'm going to know what I'm up against so that I know, do I need to look into fertility treatments? Do I need to be changing my lifestyle at all so that we can start a family? And I left that appointment with no validation, with it must be in your head or you're being dramatic. I'm like, I'm doubled over in pain twice a month. I don't think I'm being dramatic, but okay, I guess it's all in my head. And you just continue to internalize that. And I think that's a really dangerous thing is that we take what medical professionals say to heart so quickly and we never think to challenge it. I never once thought, hey, maybe we should run a different test or maybe I should see somebody else. And had I known to advocate for myself, I wouldn't have quite the dramatic story that I know.
You brought up a very important topic right here. And there was a study done actually by our friends over at Mira. And it's on medical gaslighting. And many of you know I talk about this, but like I am on a mountain shouting about the word medical gaslighting because it's a real problem and you are a product of it. So a lot of women, the study revealed a couple things. So a survey showed that 64.8% of women did not feel involved in the treatment plan prescribed to them. 52% that said that being able to track their treatment would like help them feel more involved. But some other statistics that came from it was 77% felt confused or frustrated. 57% felt ignored or dismissed. 38% felt guilty. 36% felt stereotyped or discriminated. Only 20% felt like happy or excited or heard, essentially. And so it's like there was more that came from this as well in regards to women being diagnosed with cancer later than men, women being referred to mental health providers 2 times more than men, and that women receiving less pain meds in the ER when they come in for pain than males. So it is like backed by research now to confirm exactly everything you went through and that others are going through with what you've just shared so far in your story. So thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. So that's kind of like
chapter one for this book of my life. Things kind of shifted when I was, let's see, it would have been 2018. So I would have been about 22, 23 years old. And I was very fortunate to get pregnant with my eldest. He was surprised. We weren't trying. It was such a blessing knowing now what I know about my fertility and my health. It is such a miracle that he is here at all. And we can get into that in a little while. But that pregnancy was horrible. No one talked about the difficulties with pregnancy and carrying a baby full term with endometriosis and with adenomyosis. That pregnancy tried to take me out. I was working full time. I was exhausted. I had so much pain and fatigue and food aversion. Like, everything was heightened. It wasn't just, oh, you know, she can't smell fish. It was, no, don't bring her near anything but her five particular foods or she's going to vomit. It was so intense. I had a really hard labor with him. I experienced something called prodromal labor, where I would kind of go back and forth. And something that most people won't acknowledge, I experienced reverse dilation, where I went into the hospital, dilated to a 7, going through transition in the car, and got up to the floor and was a 2. And then went through transition again and was an 8.5. And they checked me 10 hours later and I was a 4. And this is the same nurses that are checking. It's the same fingers. It should be the same measurement. And they were like, oh, we probably did it wrong before. I was like, no, I went through transition already. Third time's the charm. I finally get through transition the last time and had difficulty bringing him down, getting him into the right position. I was very fortunate to have my mom as a birth doula. I had her with me. We were doing all the things, the spinning babies, all the positions, squat, lunges, you name it, we did it. And we couldn't get him into the right position. Knowing now what we know, there was so much endometriosis in my pelvic floor, on my cervix. It's amazing that I was able to give birth vaginally as I did. He was born at about 11 minutes shy of 42 weeks, which, whew, that was a long time. Carrying him, and a beautiful, beautiful baby boy. I love him to the end of the earth. But things didn't get better after pregnancy. The pain got a lot worse. My cycle pain became even more intense. If you can imagine that, what I'm describing, it got worse. Postpartum depression and anxiety nearly killed me because of my hormones being so off from the endo we didn't realize was wreaking havoc in my body. No one ever thought to check my hormones. When I was referred to a mental health professional for anxiety and depression, no one thought to run a panel on my hormones. No one thought to do a Dutch test and make sure that, hey, what's the cause of this mental illness being so extreme? There were other contributing factors. My child, my son, I love him, but he would not sleep. And we had a hard time nursing. But the main factor with my mental health is I think that my hormones were just so off. From estrogen being elevated and progesterone being suppressed by the endometriosis and the adenomyosis, that it felt like I didn't have a chance. I was just barely surviving, and we didn't understand what I was fighting. I wish we had known back then that we were fighting against endometriosis and adenomyosis, because it would have changed the game.
To add to you again, it takes 7 to 12 years to get diagnosed, and you're far beyond that. So you're beyond statistics even at this point. So.
Very true. So my son was about 2 years old when we decided to start trying for another one. And we did not have difficulty getting pregnant again. Totally a miracle, the grace of God. But we did lose that one very early in the pregnancy. My hormones were off and I was not able to maintain that pregnancy. That was devastating. I wouldn't wish that upon my worst enemy, to lose the life of your child. My heart breaks for those out there that have experienced this, that are experiencing this. Just know that you're not alone. Reach out if you're going through that kind of loss. It's a pain like no other, and you shouldn't be going through it by yourself. I was blessed with my little rainbow baby. We had him in 2020, so he was my pandemic baby. Again, that pregnancy, whoop, it was awful. The food aversions were so intense, the pain. I was in pain the whole pregnancy, not just, oh, round ligament pain once you're in your third trimester. It was right away, I had pain throughout my abdomen. I would talk to my midwife and my OB, like, is this normal? I'd be like, well, probably just his position, or it's probably just, you have a slightly tilted uterus. So it's probably just that. No one thought to look any further than that. And I just lived with this chronic pain throughout the entire pregnancy. Granted, at this point in my life, I was pretty used to pain. It just wasn't a daily thing. It was more a bi-monthly thing with my cycle and with ovulation. So I just kind of grinned and bared it. This is the blessing of pregnancy, right? And if anything is wrong, you're supposed not supposed to say anything. You're supposed to just be glowing and be happy. And that wasn't the case. The pregnancy was so rough. My mental health kind of plummeted again. The hormones were all in balance, and it was a really rough pregnancy. Birth went so much better. I had a successful home birth with him. It was beautiful, but not without its challenges. I still had problems dilating and maintaining a full dilation. There was my cervix had a lip to it that we didn't quite understand what was going on, but the midwife was gross, but kind of had to move things around a little bit so that he could present properly and crown properly. But all in all, still a much better labor than previously. And I think that's because I did a lot of things to get my body in alignment with baby getting into the right position, getting my hips in the right position. I had done pelvic floor PT on and off, and that had been huge to help, but still nothing, ignore that, but nothing definite. Nothing had taken care of all the pain. It just kind of put a little bandage on it. Again, postpartum tried to take me out, and the daily pain really started to push forward. Fatigue like you wouldn't believe. And I could just tell that something was off. Something wasn't right in my body. And when I would bring it up to my naturopathic doctor, they'd say, well, your hormones are imbalanced because you're postpartum. And I'd go to my mental health professional, and she said, well, we just need to work on getting your anxiety under control. No one thought to check my hormones. No one thought to look into this. And because it appeared I hadn't had any difficulty conceiving, no one thought to look into my mental health and into my fertility. And then 2023 happened. And that's kind of chapter three in this saga.
Good old 2023, Naomi. Here's where, like, there should be a drum roll, I think. Like, I can't make the sound, but, like, here's the drum roll of, like, the cherry on top of it. I think it's just like, here's 2023. This is where you guys need to listen to if you want to know the best next steps and maybe where you guys all fit in even more. Here it is. Take it away.
Okay. So 2023 kind of started with a bang for us. It was January 18th of 2023. And we thought that I might be pregnant. We hadn't been trying, but we hadn't been preventing. And I was excited. We were hopeful. And then the pain hit. And this was unlike anything I had ever experienced. We had gone for a walk in the mall with our kids. We'd gone out to supper. We'd gone for a long walk, just kind of being out together as a family. And while we're walking, I'm feeling agitated. Something is off in my body. I'm starting to feel achy. And like, you know what? If I'm not pregnant, my cycle is supposed to be starting soon. This is probably just it. Coming to terms with, I'm probably not pregnant, and that's okay. And we get home and I'm just not comfortable. Something is wrong. And we got our two boys to bed. And that's when stuff hit the fan. All of a sudden, the pain hit. I have piercing pain in my abdomen. It feels like someone is beating me with a baseball bat or stabbing me with, like, I want to say, like, a fire knife or an ice knife. It's more than just a stabbing pain. It's strong on the right side. It switches to the left side. I'm doubled over. I'm flying. This continues into the wee hours of the morning. I'm up throughout the whole night, and I'm thinking, okay, I must actually be pregnant. I must be miscarrying. I've been through this physical pain before. I can recognize this. I can cope with this. And while I'm trying to deal with this pain quietly, I'm trying to let my husband sleep. Sleep is not happening. I am on all fours in the bed, rocking back and forth. I'm nearly delirious. I feel like I should be seeing things. I'm reaching the point of delirium. I'm in so much pain. we're thinking, we need to go to the hospital. We need to get to the ER. I'm like, no, this is just a miscarriage. I can power through this. You know, I'm a strong woman. I've been taught how to handle pain because my periods are rough and I can get through this. What a horrible mindset. What like a horrible thing to believe that even if it had simply been a miscarriage, and I say that lightly because miscarriage is not a simple thing, I should have been able to feel like I should have reached out for help, with especially with the amount of pain I was in. So I managed to get a few hours of sleep. The pain subsided a little, like the stabbing pain went down, but the ache, the feeling like I'm just being beaten, doesn't go away. Get up, my husband goes to work. He works from home, so I'm able to communicate with him, which is such a blessing. And I'm trying to take care of my two boys. It was probably around 4 o'clock in the morning when the bleeding started. And I thought, okay, here we go. The miscarriage is really taking place. I can grapple with this emotionally later. And right now I just need to get through the physical process. So I am trying to go about my day, trying to take care of my boys, but I can't move. I put on a movie for them. They are 2 and 4 years old. No, they're 1 and 4 years old, I believe is how it works out. It's hard to remember. It's all a blur. And I put on a movie for them and I'm just praying, God, let them entertain themselves for an hour because I need to be able to power through this. I know this will pass. And it doesn't go away. I'm laying on the floor in the fetal position with a heat pack on high wrapped around my stomach. I call my OB's office and I say, hey, I think I'm having a miscarriage, but this is really painful. Do I need to come in? What do I need to do? Wonderful nurse on the other end says, I'm so sorry. This is a horrible thing to have to go through. Said, thank you. I do understand I've been through this before, but this is something's not right. Well, take some ibuprofen. How many times have I been told that in my life? Take some ibuprofen, take twice the ibuprofen, and then a couple hours later, take twice the Tylenol you should take and just alternate that, and that should take care of it. I'm like, okay. So I take the ibuprofen, a couple hours later, I take the Tylenol. The pain is not being touched. It's not going down at all. It's just increasing. The stabbing pain is back. This is not right. Something is really wrong. I'm calling the OB on and off throughout the day. I have a relationship with this nurse by now. We're like on first name basis. I'm like, girl, something is not right. I'm feeling so much pain. Do I need to come in? Do I need to go to the ER? Like, what's going on? I go through the entire day laying on the floor. My kid destroyed the house. That I don't care because I just need to survive this day while my husband is working. He gets off at 4:30. I know that I can make it till then, right? Which is an understatement. I have no idea how I survived until then. It's about 4 o'clock. I call the OB's office, talk to my nurse friend, and I say, this is wrong. Like, I'm in so much pain. This has to go away. She says, hey, is the pain stronger on one side than the other? I went, yeah, it's a lot stronger on one side than the other. Like, it all over hurts, but it's stronger on one side. I barely get the sentence out. She says, you need to go to the ER. I think you're having an ectopic pregnancy. Like, the doctor says, you need to go into the emergency room because this is dangerous. Red lights, sirens in my head. I'm freaking out. I'm like, okay, I'll figure something out. I don't know what I'm doing because my husband's not off yet, but I'll get childcare. I'll get in. I'm freaking out. Like, an ectopic pregnancy can be life-threatening. Like, this is awful. This isn't just, and I say that lightly, just a miscarriage. This could be really dangerous. So I my husband gets off. I talk to him. I said, we need to go. I explain what's been going on the whole day. And he's okay. We pack up our kids, get them to some relatives, and into the emergency room we go. And oh man, do I wish that I don't know what I wish. It was just awful. It was just a horrible experience. It's the 19th of January. We go in. I'm doubled over in pain. I'm nearly delirious again. It's just as bad as it had been the night before. I'm on my hands and knees in the waiting room of the ER. I don't care how dirty the floor is. I'm on my hands and knees because it's the only way I can cope with the pain. Finally, I get called back, which felt like an eternity. It was probably a good 45 minutes, but it felt like a million years. Get back there. We get blood drawn. We get an IV in, which are not my favorite things in the world. I have a lot of fear of being in a medical arena, particularly with needles. So I was like, oh, good. I'm in pain and I get to be stabbed, but we'll do what we need to do. I need to make sure that I'm safe. And the doctor comes in And he said, okay, well, we're going to do an ultrasound. We're going to do a vaginal ultrasound. We're going to run some blood work and just confirm if you are pregnant. And if you are, if this is an ectopic pregnancy. I'm like, okay, what are we doing for my pain? And right away, they wanted to give me Dilaudid, which like really strong narcotic. That freaks me out. I don't want to be out of my mind. Can we do something else? I should have taken the stinking narcotic because then they downgraded it. And I don't know if it was, oh, she must not actually be in so much pain or what, but they gave me liquid ibuprofen through my IV. I am dating a level 7 or 8 in pain, and they give me liquid ibuprofen. The doctor is very dismissive. If you get the feeling that I am bothering him, that I am a nuisance, that why did you come in here? We do the ultrasound, which was very difficult, hard to lay still when you're in that much pain, and they shove something up your hoo-ha. That was glorious. Ultrasound shows nothing. It says that my uterine lining is slightly thickened, but that's probably just because of your cycle. Everything looks fine. My blood work comes back and I am not pregnant. So it's not an ectopic pregnancy. You would think that the doctor would go, okay, so let's figure out what's causing this pain. The doctor comes in, you're not pregnant. So it's not an ectopic pregnancy. We're going to finish this round of fluids for you and you can go home. Like, what? Well, you're sending me home? And I did not know. I was so tired and so just drained from being in so much pain that I didn't think to fight for myself. I didn't think to say, hey, so if it's not an ectopic pregnancy, what is it? And the doctor leaves. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'm going home. Which was just, I got this very strong feeling that the doctor thought I was a drug seeker. That he thought I was in there because I wanted some strong pain meds and I wasn't really in pain. I felt like he thought I was lying, was the vibe he was giving off the whole time. And it just wasn't a comfortable situation.
At this point, I'm even more angry in today's episode, but just when you think it can't get any worse, it does.
It does, but we do get a little bit of sunshine here. So the wonderful nurse that I had in the ER turns to me. She's, you know, taking out my IV. She's getting me ready to go home. She says, have you ever heard of endometriosis? What? Probably somewhere in the back of my head. She said, well, I have endometriosis and what you're going through looks a lot like what I go through. And you should just maybe look into it. This was not a doctor. This was not the triage nurse, but this was the room nurse who is giving me this advice. Why didn't the doctor think to say something like that? Thank God for that nurse. I go home. I wish I could find her. I wish I knew who she was so I could like buy her flowers or something. She changed the story for me. And so we go home. The next day, I am still in tremendous amounts of pain. The ER doctor said, follow up with your OB and just make sure everything's fine. And so I called and got an appointment, not with my OB because she was out of town, but with just the OB kind of on call on the 20th of January. So this is 3 days now that I've been in this pain. And I talked to the OB. I'm like, hey, so I was looking into this because, of course, I spent the rest of the night researching endometriosis. I said, you know, this really lines up with a lot of the stuff I've experienced my whole life. I have digestive issues, weird leg pain, fatigue, brain fog, period pain, ovulation pain. I'm listing all the things. I'm meeting all the criteria. And I said, do you think I might have endometriosis? And what do we need to do to find that out? She says, well, it's a possibility. I think first we need to make sure that your appendix hasn't ruptured. In my head, I felt like someone like smacked me. I was like, what? Why? If that's a danger, why didn't the ER doctor think to check that? If I was reporting stabbing pain on my right side, why didn't he think appendix may have ruptured? So I have a CT scan with contrast. That stuff will mess you up. We go through the criteria for PCOS. She says, you kind of meet this criteria, so it's probably PCOS. I don't know what's causing this pain that you're in right now, but let's just make sure your appendix is fine and we can talk about endometriosis later. So I have the CT done. Everything is fine. My appendix looks fine. Nothing has ruptured. All my organs look fine. We have no idea what is causing this pain and no one wants to follow up about it. So I make an appointment with my regular OB. I say, okay, like, what is going on? What caused pain? What is endometriosis? How do you check for that? Because the more I read about endometriosis, the more it's resonating with me, the more it makes sense that all of these dots that everyone has said you're just a mystery about are all connected. And what if I could find something that was an answer to the questions I've been asking my whole life? So I'm starting to feel hopeful. Like, what if this is it? Is this treatable? What are the steps? And my OB says, well, we can assume that you have endometriosis and you can go on birth control because that's the standard protocol for it to manage the pain. And I said, well, my husband and I would like to have more children. So why would I go on birth control? Or she says, oh, well, then we come to just monitor for pain, or you could have a laparoscopy and I can check for the endometriosis. And if I find it, I will, in her words, I will do ablation or excision. Do you want to define that stuff?
Yeah. So ablation, let's talk about that. Ablation is where they basically cauterize, burn, or fry. So there's an image I like to use when I do my presentation on endo, and it looks like a garden. And essentially, you're burning, frying, or putting fire to a weed, or even think of like fertilizing, chemical fertilizing it. You're not removing it. It's still there. The roots are still there. It just, you're trying to burn it off, die it off, leave parts behind. Excision is complete removal, and it is getting the roots up, nice clean edges, removing all of that weed. And this is where I do my rant. You've got to check your provider and make sure they've had advanced training and residency in excision, because the reality is what you just heard, they'll advertise it. They'll say it. They'll claim to do it, and they shouldn't be doing it. And I'm going to refer back. And we're going to have Dr. Adam Duke share more on this month. I have some episodes coming out with him, but our very first one we did that kind of sparked some big conversation and great talk and patients feeling heard and validated and getting appropriate care was from March of 2023. And I'll link that in today's show notes. He goes over this step by step, how you can screen your provider and the difference in your OBGYN and surgeon versus an actual excision specialist. So to end this big piece of what I'm saying is make sure they're actually an endometriosis excision specialist and they are doing excision surgery all day, every day. They no longer deliver babies, that they are not seeing people for routine healthcare. They are doing all day, every day excision care.
Absolutely. And it can be so confusing when you, as a patient, someone who doesn't have a medical background goes into this, because I had gone to my OBGYN bio on the hospital website. I had read that, you know, you needed a well-trained surgeon to perform surgery for endometriosis. And when I looked at her professional bio, it said she specialized in robotic surgery and she could do an endometriosis surgery. I had no idea that it was the wrong kind of surgery. When I made the appointment to talk to her about endometriosis, she confirmed that she would do ablation and if excision was necessary, that she would do excision. And this was incorrect information, as she was not trained to do excision. In that episode with Dr. Duke, you guys talk about how the overarching boards are telling OBGYNs that they are just as qualified as an excision specialist to do these surgeries. So I don't harbor any bitterness towards that particular OBGYN, because she's being told that she's just as trained as Dr. Duke, as an excision specialist. And that's just not the case. And that's where vetting your doctors for yourself, like you said, finding out, are they still delivering babies? Are they seeing standard, typical patients, or is this their bread and butter? Are they only doing this kind of surgery? If the answer to that question is yes, they're doing other things, then go the other direction. Run, get out, go find someone who only does excision, who only does endometriosis. So I scheduled with her March 10th of 2023. I went in for surgery thinking that this was going to give me the answers that I needed, that they were going to find. She said, oh, you probably for sure have endometriosis. You meet all the criteria. We're going to go in there. We're going to find it. We're going to get rid of it. And you're going to feel so much better after you recover from surgery. Went into surgery, woke up. Once I'm through the haze from the anesthesia, I asked my husband, like, did they find it? Did they find it? And he looks at me and he says, they didn't find anything.
And this is where I also say that
that provider who does endo all day, every day is trained to see it. The other providers can't even see it, as you're hearing here.
Absolutely. And well, I have evidence of that later in the story. She said that there was all kinds of stuff, didn't say what it was, up by your appendix. So I burned that all out. She says there was stuff on the back of your uterus. I burned that all out and I biopsied that. She did not biopsy any of the stuff, quote unquote, by my appendix, which is important. And I don't remember the second area or the third area. She said that she had biopsied something and it all came back as benign fibroconnective tissue, which is just random growth. For me, I'm like, okay, so why is that there? If it's not supposed to be there, I need to know why it's there. She was very calm about it, saying it was just fibroconnective tissue. There's nothing to be said about it. I had my post-op with her several weeks later, and she basically said, well, you don't have endometriosis. We have no idea what causes your pain, your digestive issues, what causes your cycles to be so awful, but we can pretend that you have endo. And you can go on these medications and you can have, she literally suggested a vaginal medication that I would go in to a clinic and have this medication shot up my vagina and then go home. Because one of the things that I had, and there's no TMI on this podcast, but I had a lot of pain with sex. It was not pleasant. It was very uncomfortable. It was very painful. And nothing we did really changed that. And it was something that I thought, oh, you know, I've heard about maybe just having a tight vagina. Maybe I'm just small and this is how it's going to be. How sad that I resigned myself to that reality, that this is just the way it's going to be. Like, I couldn't wear a tampon because it hurt too much. This is how painful things were. And so I'm supposed to go and get medication shot up my vagina. That way I can hopefully have sex without being in pain. Yeah, that's what I want to do when I'm trying to feel turned on so that I can have some time with my husband after the kids go to bed. I want to go to a clinic and get medication shot up there. That sounds fun. So it was very awkward. It was, yeah, we'll give you some medication or you can get this weird injection and hopefully it'll take care of the pain, but we have no idea what's causing it and you just get to live with this pain. But we do want to follow up with those digestive issues that you have. These probably need to be addressed. Let's make sure that your GI tract is fine. So at 27 years old, you need to have a colonoscopy and an upper endoscopy. Oh, joy. That was awful. In April of 2023, I had a full colonoscopy and upper endoscopy. Not a pleasant experience. I'm hoping and praying, let them find something. Let me have celiac. Don't let there be Crohn's, but let there be Crohn's. I want answers at this point. I'm just desperate to know what is going on with my body. And the results come back. Everything looks completely fine. There's nothing wrong with you. What? Like, then why do I hurt every time I eat? This is getting worse with every month that passes. I can't eat anything without pain anymore. Something has got to be wrong. So I kind of decide, you know what? I'm done. I'm done looking in this realm of medicine. And I'm going back to my naturopathic doctor. I'm going to take all these puzzle pieces that I've gathered this horrible past 4 or 5 months. And I am going to her and I'm going to say, put these puzzle pieces together because this is what you're really good at. So I go to my naturopathic doctor and I say, all right, here's all the test results. Here's all the labs that I've had done because I've been stuck so many times. I feel like a tin cushion. And here's the results from all the tests from the surgery. What do you think is going on? And she looks at me and she says, Naomi, I think they're wrong. I think you have endometriosis. And there is a gal in town. She's just moved back recently. Her name is Tara Bradner. And you need to go see her because she will know if you have this. And she will know where to send you because I know of this guy. He's in Utah. He's in Idaho. I can't remember where he's at. I can't remember his name, but he's like the best of the best. And I think my gut tells me you need to go see this surgeon. But first, go see Dr. Tara and get some answers. Get someone on your side. Like, okay, great. Another doctor. Like, this is fantastic. Another person poking and prodding. This is not something that I want right now. oh my goodness, am I grateful that my doctor said, I don't know what to do with you, go see someone else. And that was the difference. All my life I've been told, I don't know what to do with you. And that's the end of the sentence. But this time it was, I don't know what to do, but this person might, and you need to go see this person. That was huge to have a doctor humble themselves and say that. So I took it very seriously, made an appointment with Tara, and oh my goodness, best appointment ever. Probably a good hour. A good hour we talked on the phone. And by the end of it, I left feeling terrified, feeling encouraged, feeling so validated because you went through my whole medical record and you went through every symptom that I've ever felt and you validated every single one. You said, this is real. This is not in your head. This is a real thing you're going through. And you 100% have endometriosis. I'm sending the referral to Dr. Duke right now. To have someone be on my side for the first time, and it was I was 27 years old. I had been cycling for 17 years. To have someone take me seriously changed the game. I left that appointment and I sat down on my bed and I just cried. I couldn't believe, like, this might actually be real. I had been so broken and so heart shattered from the surgery results with my OBGYN coming back negative. And then to hear, no, here's why they're negative. She wasn't qualified. She couldn't see it. I sent you the pictures that were from that surgery. And you said, yeah, I'm not an excision surgeon, but that doesn't look right. And to hear you say that was just so validating, isn't a strong enough word. So if something is off with you, if doctors are not taking you seriously, go find somebody who will. Don't sit there and take what they say. You know your body better than anybody else on the planet. And if you know something is wrong, go find someone who will take you seriously, who will give you answers, because you shouldn't have to live in pain. You shouldn't have to live in fear and confusion. I lived in fear of when my cycle was going to come. It was predictable. Thank goodness I could count down the days, but we had to cancel family events. I had missed birthdays. My son's birthday in 2023, I was miserable laying on the floor with a heat pack for most of the day because my period had started. And just no one should have to miss that. And this is my 5-year-old's birthday because I was in so much pain. That's not fair to have to live that way. So if you're living in pain and no one's taking you seriously, talk to Tara. Go find somebody who will take you seriously.
I just want to commend you. You didn't give up. And I think that's so hard because you highlight too how you had just been done. Like, I'm not going to go see somebody else. I'm done with this. Because of the exhaustion of being medically gaslit. And it's so hard when they come in, especially to see me, because I'm usually like the eighth person they've seen. And you did that. And so you're right. Like, it's kind of fun. I have it down within 10 minutes. I can usually tell if someone has it. And the other thing I want to highlight that everyone needs to hear is, like, this is real. This is not in your head. This is not made up. This is real stuff. Why would you make this up? Like, why are we making this up? And I don't get why other providers can't just be like, I don't know. Well, let's find somebody else. Let's go to somebody else. So I also want to commend your other provider who said, hey, you have this. Let's grow your team. Grow your team. You know, let's go to someone else too and see what they have to say about this.
Absolutely. So throughout the summer, I had appointments with you and was waiting for that phone consultation with Dr. Duke. I was very excited, very anxious, and just trying to deal with the pain that was literally getting worse by the week. It was every day I was in terrible pain. I was hunched over. I was not able to walk straight. Everything I ate made the pain worse. It didn't matter if it was healthy or junk food. It didn't matter if it was gluten-free, dairy-free, sugar-free. It didn't matter if it was crappy store-bought, like dollar store pizza. Everything made me hurt. July 19th, I wound up in the ER again with that just severe, I call it an abdominal episode, where I was just in so much pain. I was like, I can't function. Like, I'm nearly delirious. I'm in so much pain. It was the same doctor that checked me in January. And he walked in the room and I just about rolled my eyes. I was like, oh, here we go. Here we go again. And I'm like, you know what? I'm changing the game. I'm changing the narrative here. I said, you know what? I have a diagnosis of potential endometriosis, and I think that my endo was flaring. They gave me real pain meds. They didn't give me Dilaudid. I was like, I don't want narcotics. I want to still be with it. But they gave me some real pain meds. They gave me some real nausea meds because I was dry heaving. Because I was in so much pain. And the doc said, well, it's probably just that endo. Finish the meds and go home. I was like, we're not going to check into it. We're not going to do anything. Whatever. You know what? I don't care what you're saying anymore to this doctor in my hometown, because I know I've got a professional coming. I've got a real endo doc coming. And that phone call with Dr. Duke was on August 8th. And that was a call that, to say it changed my life, is the understatement of the year.
All right. We've entered your next chapter where you've met me. You were basically like, whoa, on the first visit. It was so good and validating, but it's always overwhelming. And I like to share that with patients. Like, you're going to go through a lot of emotions after our first visit together. And then I usually make them listen to that podcast episode that you mentioned, where Dr. Duke and I, who is a endometriosis specialist, talk about this. So I've referred you on, and you're at your visit is where we're going to go next.
Yep, August 8th of 2023, I had my phone consultation with Dr. Duke because he is not in the same state, let alone the same town that I am in. And that phone call, wow, just wow. To get on the phone with him and have him say, I've looked through all your records, I've listened to your story, I've talked with Dr. Tara, and I'm looking at the pictures that your OB took during that quote-unquote excision surgery, that ablation surgery, that said there was no endometriosis. And he said, I can see it already. I can clearly see endometriosis in these pictures. To hear that, I just started crying. Like, I can't begin to explain how it felt to have someone go, yes, this is real. This is legit. It's not in your head. You're not making this up. All of the lies that you believe or that you're told, just to have them melt with that validation of someone who you know is a specialist, who knows what he's talking about, that was huge. So we absolutely need to do excision surgery. I'm looking at this picture of your appendix, and your appendix is at a 90-degree angle. I can't believe your doctor said it looked normal because it's at a 90-degree angle. No wonder you have so much pain on your right side. So that needs to go. We need to check for bladder interstitial cystitis, make sure everything's healthy there. And we'll do excision of the endometriosis. We'll check everything and everywhere. And then he went on to the hardest part of that phone call. And he said, well, looking at these pictures, and I'm looking at the picture of your uterus, and I can clearly see adenomyosis. I can see the indicators, the modeling and the veining of adenomyosis. Your uterus needs to come out. And that was so hard to hear. As a 27-year-old who had planned to continue growing her family, to hear from someone who is the best of the best that my uterus was very unhealthy and needed to come out, that it was the cause of a lot of my pain, and that I could choose to not have a hysterectomy and just do excision and the appendix and the bladder IC check, but I would be back in a few years to have the hysterectomy because I wouldn't be able to handle the pain, not in a you're weak kind of way, but in that it's only going to get worse. That was a huge, like, emotional punch. It was a very hard decision to make because, as I said, we had wanted to continue to grow our family, but we did decide that we were going to move forward with it and that we were going to have my uterus, my cervix, and my tubes removed. He said that as long as my ovaries didn't have endometriosis on them, that he would leave my ovaries intact so that I could continue to create my own hormones, which was a blessing, but that my uterus needed to come out.
And I want to just say here, this is not an easy decision. For some, it's like, oh, no big deal. This is not an easy decision. Not an easy decision for many, 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 like you just said. And I know you, of all people, prayed about this, thought about this long and hard, and you still decided, which you'll share here, to go forward with that road.
Yeah, we came to the decision that it was the right choice for us because it was time for me to start living, to live a full life, to not live a crap, dull, hollow life, because I was so debilitated and crippled by this pain that I lived in that was growing literally by the day. It was time for me to be able to be there for my two sons, to be there for my husband, to show up in my business and for my friends and family. And I couldn't wrap my head fully around, and I still can't wrap my head fully around the concept of living without that pain and to live without that fear of when my cycle's going to hit or when ovulation is going to hit and I'm going to be debilitated. That constant thought of, is this month going to send me to the ER again? You had written some prescriptions for some pretty strong painkillers for me. And one of them was a really strong one that I hadn't taken, but it was if you feel like going to the ER, take this first. If it doesn't work, then go to the ER because you need some serious, serious, serious meds. And to not have to worry about that anymore, to not think, am I going to have to take that med, you know, was ultimately what led that decision to move forward with the hysterectomy. So it was just a waiting game. I was scheduled for my surgery November 1st of 2023. Between August and November, the pain increased every day. And that sounds really dramatic and kind of fanciful, but it's not. It legitimately just got more intense every day. It would be more widespread. The digestive issues discontinued. The pain was everywhere. It was my legs. It was my abdomen. It was when I would go to the bathroom. It would be when I'd sit down, when I'd stand up, when I'd walk. I couldn't walk for any distance at all without pain. Even on medication, multiple times a day on prescription painkillers and wearing, I had two battery-powered seat packs that I would wrap to my stomach and crank on high. I have like burn marks on my stomach from wearing them all the time because it was the only thing that made it so that I function and take care of my kid. November. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I remember when you showed me this, and now I share all the time with people about this fanny pack because so many women need this device to function. I'm like, you'll never guess. One of my patients found the coolest thing. So I do share that a lot.
It is an invaluable tool if you are an endo or adeno warrior, definitely.
Yes, for sure.
So November 1st, 11/1/23, which all the one to me, it's such a, not like a sign, but like it's no coincidence that it was a special number to me. My first son was born at 11:11 p.m. My wedding anniversary is 1/1/01. So ones are kind of a thing for me. So to have my surgery on 11/1/23 was kind of cool. But I had my excision surgery. I had my appendix removed. I had the bladder interstitial cystitis check. And I had a total hysterectomy minus my ovaries. And this was at Northwest Specialty Hospital with Dr. Adam Duke. I have never in my life received such care and kindness in a hospital in my entire life. And I've been in the hospital with my little babies and nothing compared to how kind they were, how gentle they were, how understanding of my fears. And even the morning of surgery, Duke said, no, this is a big choice. And are you sure you want to do this? I want to make sure that you're on board. And I looked at him and I went, let's do it. Because I knew it was time to be able to get my life back. Not just back, to get my life for the first time since I was like 10 years old. Waking up from surgery, I remember feeling like something was different. Like I could tell. And granted, I'm crazy on painkillers. I'm still got anesthesia in me, but like I could tell that something had shifted and something had changed. And when I say from literally that day on, I have seen progress. I have seen improvement. Has there been setbacks? Has there been, oh, this still hurts. There's still a little pain. This is uncomfortable. There's a learning curve to this. Absolutely. There's so much to do still. There's hormones to balance. There's pelvic floor physical therapy to go through. There's dietary changes and lifestyle changes to continuing to live with this disease. But to know that it's not in there anymore, that adenomyosis, that disease uterus is not wreaking havoc on my body anymore, to not have that pain, I can't begin to describe what it's like to live on the other side of that surgery and to have that hope for tomorrow where before it was just completely hopeless. It was, okay, I wonder when the pain's going to hit.
And to not have that anymore is unreal. The pathology report confirmed endometriosis in several places and then also found fibrosis, which he said this is probably burned endometriosis from that ablation. And he confirmed the adenomyosis as well. So it was, you know, going into the surgery, you have those fears, you know, I've had a surgery before and they didn't find it. What if he doesn't find it? What if it really is in my head and it wasn't, and it's not in your head? If you're really experiencing all of this pain and all of these symptoms, it's not in your head. Just trust your gut and trust Dr. Tara and trust Dr. Duke. They know what they're doing. But it's crazy to know that that was wreaking havoc in my body, and to look back on my life now and see all the ways that it affected me. One thing that Duke had mentioned when discussing the adenomyosis is he said, you could keep your uterus and you could try for another baby, but the disease is so progressed that the chances of you conceiving are really slim, and the chances of you being able to carry term again are even slimmer. So it was a miracle that I was able to conceive the three times I did, and a miracle I was able to have the two wonderful sons that I do. And to know that there are women out there who struggle with fertility because of endometriosis, like, I didn't know that I was fighting it. I can't imagine if I had known the anxiety it would have caused and the pain it would have caused my heart to know that I was fighting against this. I'm so blessed that wasn't such an evident struggle, that it was just straight up a miracle.
Yes. One thing I always like to share with endo and adeno, you may or may not have fertility issues. Like, there's what it's such a confusing myth almost, like, but it's truth. So it's not a myth. It's like, yes, these diseases can cause infertility, but just because you maybe had the women who had zero issues, like with conception, let alone perhaps let's even talk about silent endometriosis where you have zero symptoms, that doesn't mean that you don't have it or that you do have it per se. But like I always like to share, you know, having children doesn't mean you're excluded from these two diseases.
Absolutely. I've heard it said that, I think it was Dr. Duke on your podcast that said any amount of endo can cause any amount of pain, because I didn't come back with, you know, endometriosis raising level stage 4 all over my abdomen. I came back with very particular areas with stage 1 endometriosis, and that adenomyosis just being really chronic. But, you can be tempted to feel invalidated by that number, but really the stages are just a classification for insurance purposes. Any amount of endo can cause any amount of pain. And so it doesn't matter if it's just one little itty bitty speck, it's still endometriosis. It still counts. You still are an endo warrior. You're still fighting this.
Absolutely. So here you are post-surgery. Share more about being on the other side. How are you feeling? And of course, please share any tips you have for our listeners, whether they know they have it, whether they know they don't know they have it, they are confused by what they've been told and the road they've been down and where they should go next.
Absolutely. So definitely, if you think that, if any of this is resonating with you, if any of the stories sound familiar or you've lived through some of this, get it checked out. Talk to Tara. Go find a connection with Duke and get it checked out, because having that answer is, I want to say it's like half the battle, is knowing that reason, having that cause for the pain or the discomfort or the issues that you're having. On the other side, it has been crazy to not live with, I mean, it's not horrible to live without a period. It's kind of nice to not have to deal with that anymore. There is a lot of heartbreak to it, to know, you know, this is when my period would have hit, because I am still tracking hormone levels and such to get a grip on where my levels are. So knowing, oh, this would have been my cycle, or I am ovulating right now and I can't get pregnant, is really, really hard. Something I've said to my husband is, you know, I am expected to go into surgery, not have a hysterectomy. That wasn't, you know, on my radar. I expected to have excision surgery and come out with an infertility diagnosis, not to come out sterile. And that, it hurt a lot. So there's a lot of mental, emotional healing to be done. But physically, I'm doing fantastic. My energy levels, I haven't had this much energy, and I'm only 3 months post-op. I haven't had this much energy in 7 to 10 years. I feel really good in my body, in my own skin.
there is still discomfort, you know, with ovulation or when my cycle would hit. I still do get cramps because muscles hold memories. And so I'm doing pelvic floor PT and chiropractic to teach my muscles how to function without the disease and without my uterus in there. We're going to be doing some hormone balancing that I'm super pumped for, Tara and I, to kind of get a grapple on that and teach my body what levels are supposed to be like, because I've never experienced normal hormone levels because of the diseases. So I feel really good. I feel really grateful. There are hard days. There are days that I'm uncomfortable. There are days that I have pain, but it's something that two ibuprofen and sitting down for 20 minutes will take care of, not a heat pack on high, burning my stomach with prescription painkillers and being curled up in a fetal position. It's nothing compared to this. And I know that as I continue to put in the work to do the PT, to balance my hormones, to change my diet a little bit, that I will only go up from here, that the sky is the limit. I have hope for the first time in my life when it comes to my health and my body. And that is something that I can't put a price on.
Naomi, thank you so, so much for sharing. Is there anything else you would like to share with listeners today? You've been through so much, and I know you're open about it, right? They can connect with you if I attach your social links.
Absolutely.
I will share Naomi's contact information in today's show notes. Head over, say hi to her, find another friend to talk to and just kind of walk through this journey with. Before we end, Naomi, can you share your three tips?
Absolutely. So my three hopeful hints, if something feels bad, go get answers. And if your normal doctor won't give an answer, go find a new doctor. Advocate for yourself. Keep digging and keep searching. Don't settle for anything less than a solid answer.
Your gut knows best always, you guys. Like, you know, a lot of you come in, you're like, I've always felt, or I think, or I knew it. Listen to your gut.
Yes, yes, yes. My second tip is to write everything down. Make a note on your phone. I did detailed notes throughout this whole process, and I still have them, and I'm so grateful that I had them because I didn't have to scramble during an appointment and go, what was that that I was feeling, or what day was that, or what point in my cycle was that? I tracked all of it. So keep detailed notes of what your body is doing and what you're feeling, because that can really, you can start to see patterns in it. You can start to put pieces together. If you're not tracking your cycle, track your cycle so that you can start to feel trends that can really clue you in on what's going on in your body.
That's a great one, Naomi.
And my third tip kind of rolls with that, tracking your cycle, but also tracking appointments. Track if you have pain, track everything. Write everything down. Keep it in a big old long note on your phone if you want. Or if you're a pen and paper person like me, write it all down in a notebook. Track of everything, because when you write it all down or you keep a record of it, that's when you can really start to see, like I said, those trends. You can see the patterns. You can start to unravel that mystery. And then also you're able to present this to whatever doctor you're seeing. And I feel like they're more prone to take you seriously because you have all this evidence. You have this record of, no, this happened at this point in my cycle and this is what I was feeling. Or I went to the ER and this is what the doctor said and this is what they prescribed me. Get your medical record. Just keep track of all of that, because it's in those details that a lot of times you'll find those answers.
So much yes to all of that. You guys, head over, say hi to Naomi. And again, I think if you get one takeaway from this is, you know your body best. What you are experiencing is real. And do not stick with one person or your second opinion. Go get your third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth opinion until you feel heard, validated, and like your symptoms are actually being addressed and taken serious. Don't stop. Keep going.
Feel free to reach out to me if you have questions about the story. If you just need somebody to talk to about this, I am always here. My inbox is always open.
Thank you so much, Naomi, for doing this. I know it wasn't easy, but I hope this is just another step by sharing in your healing journey. And I'm honored to walk beside you with this. Thank you for being on our show.
Thank you, Tara.
If you enjoyed podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Highway to Health Podcast, hosted by Jeremy Quinby, provides guidance, quality resources, and inspiration for anyone seeking wellness in mind, body, and spirit. There's an episode that you should check out called The Value of Our Emotions, where Jeremy helps listeners understand the role emotions serve and what we can learn about our present state by staying attuned to them. Check out Highway to Health podcast on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.